listeners for tuning in each and every Thursday. We really appreciate you listening to our show and what we have to offer. We really appreciate, again, you listening to Literary Nation Talk Radio and enjoying what we offer. We promote literacy. We promote the love of literature, and we promote illiteracy, a new term. I want to give a shout out to my good friend, Dr. Donna Ford, who had me on social media yesterday sharing with me the meaning of illiteracy and the importance of illiteracy in addressing the interests of young people today. So I'm excited about today's show. I have two fantastic guests who are going to be joining me today. I've been excited about getting both of them on for a long time. Finally got them scheduled. My first guest is going to be Dr. Camila Martin. She is author of a fantastic book. We're going to share about her book, and then she'll be followed by Quentin Love, who is a restaurant owner and author of two books as well. So again, you don't want to miss our show today. Definitely want you to be listening in to shout out and share with your friends who may not be listening today, who may want to join the conversation, because again, we are going to have a great conversation today, because my two special guests are really on top of my game. Make sure everybody, before you start your holiday shopping, put books on your list. You know, we are living in a country today where we should not be having a literacy issue with the money we splurge and spend in various ways. So I want to make sure our people take a few dollars or buy a gift card at Barnes and Nobles and encourage reading, writing, and literature, because it's so important in the lives of our young people. And that's what I want to talk to my first guest about, Dr. Camila Martin. Thank you so much for joining Literary Nation Talk Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm really excited. You know, I found out about you. Anytime I see somebody's name who are doing something around literature, around literary arts, and they're from this somehow associated with the state of Arkansas and the city of Little Rock, you know, I jump at the opportunity to find out who they are and see how they can give back. So thank you so much for calling into Liberty Nation and wanting to give back to what we do.
Absolutely.
So I mentioned you're not from Little Rock originally, but I think you spent some time in the Arkansas area. Is that correct?
I sure did. I did. I spent about 6 years there, my formative years, from third grade through eighth grade. I was in living in Little Rock Air Force Base. So yes, Little Rock is near and dear to me. Spent a lot of time there.
Yeah. So that time you spent in Little Rock, was that when or was prior to that love of literature kicked in?
Actually, yes, I can certainly identify it as those early years in Little Rock. It was third grade, to be exact. I was attending Tolleson Elementary School in Pulaski County. Shout out to Tolleson Tigers. It was the third grade that I first started keeping a journal and writing stories. By the fourth grade, I had started reading the Babysitter's Club collection, the series. And for Christmas, I remember for fourth grade, all I wanted was a typewriter so that I could be a serious writer. You know, writing in notebooks just did not get it. So I was constantly reading and trying to create my own novels and short stories. So those two particular years, third and fourth grade, I remember I had in my mind established that I was going to be a writer.
For young people out there, they may say, what is a typewriter? You know, but it's the early part of what we would see as laptops and tablets and that sort of thing. You know, it's interesting that you asked your parents for a typewriter. I guess you did have that, truly did have that bug early on.
I did, yeah.
And it was just the, you know, I guess the book clubs in schools, you know, the schools advocating and promoting reading and writing to young people, that helped was stimulate, or was it part of your household?
I think a little bit of both. My mom was definitely a reader. You know, I remember her reading The Color Purple and Flowers in the Attic and all of these other books that I was not allowed to read. But I also remember spending a great deal of time in the school library. We would go, if not daily, weekly. You know, when I had free time, I could get a pass and go to the library. It was called a library then, not the media center. And I would simply work my way through the books. And that's just, I just got lost in there. That was how I spent all of my time. So it was definitely both the school environment as well as the home environment.
You really said something that's really important in terms of the work that I do and I try to advocate. You mentioned libraries, how important libraries are to our communities. I'm good to hear you say that because that's what mm-hmm. I've really been advocating for those parents who cannot afford to buy books. Libraries can give you, you can find all the books you want. And even if the library doesn't have the particular book, they have a part of their mission and goals and accessibility to books. You know, the libraries across the world, actually, in many
Absolutely.
Cases. So I'm glad to hear you say that, you know, about libraries and how it played a role in your love of literature.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, so, absolutely. I'm still a member of my public library here in Savannah and take my son to the library all the time.
So tell me about, you know, now you're kind of in high school and, you know, thinking about college. Did that book continue through high school?
You know, it did. I wasn't quite sure how I could sustain a living and have a career around writing. So once I got to high school, you know, I decided that I needed to do something that, you know, would pay the bills. And I thought I wanted to be a psychology major and I wanted to work with autistic children. But I was always writing. I was still always writing. And it's funny because I found an old project that I had done in maybe 11th grade. And in that project, I had said that, you know, one of my goals in life was to be a professor of African American literature. And I had to laugh because I didn't even remember that I was even aware of that at the time, that was even a possibility for me. So, you know, as I was kind of preparing to go to college, you know, I thought I'd be a creative writer. I'd do some of this stuff on the side. I was still always reading, but I didn't really think that I could make a career out of reading. I didn't understand how that was possible, but that certainly changed by the end of my freshman year in college. I kind of turned that around a bit.
Mm-hmm. That interest just really got going, being at those institutions that you attended, one being Florida State, where you said, okay, this is what I want to do.
Yes, absolutely. I was about a freshman, and I took an Introduction to African American Literature course at Georgia Southern University, and our book was the Norton Anthology of African American Literature. And up until that point, all the literature that I had read was, you know, English literature, American literature, the classics. I had been introduced to Alice Walker and Toni Morrison, but when I got that book, when I got the Norton Anthology, I was just blown away that there was an entire 1,000-page book full
yes.
of black writers, and it was
yes.
in that class that I decided that for the rest of my life I was going to master all of the works in that book, that I had to read it from cover to cover, and that was just going to be my life's goal, because if all of these writers were of African descent, then I needed to know about them. I was completely blown away by just the size of that book, and that really is what kind of cemented me changing my major to English and really pursuing that goal in higher education.
I mean, and that's fantastic, you know, again, to see you have those, I guess, life prompts, I could say, that said, hey, this is what I want to do based on those experiences, you know, and opportunities mm-hmm. to be around individuals and have texts and books accessible to you that would kind of push you in a direction to say, hey, this is what I want to do. You know, you're an educator. And this is a question that commonly comes up in terms of culturally relevant reading material. I guess in this sense, we can say that is what further spurred your interest in becoming an educator or writer, that sort of thing, because you saw culturally relevant reading material early on?
Absolutely, absolutely. Like, I did not know it existed. And, you know, I was still a voracious reader of a number of different types of material, but it was being able to connect to the history and the culture that really just it just blew me away. And I was, you know, I was kind of coming into my consciousness about being a black woman and what that meant. And, you know, I was learning all of these histories that I had been unaware of in high school. And so that really, it really did shape how I wanted to move forward. And, you know, I just, I, yeah, that was, that was really important. It was really important to how I decided to identify and also to move forward in terms of career choices and even reading choices after that particular class.
Again, this is Patrick Arpey, this is the Literary Nation Talk Radio on JoyNet Radio, and my first guest today is Dr. Camila Martin, who is currently at Savannah State University, where she is teaching African-American Studies English.
Yes, correct.
Yes, yeah. And she is currently, we're going to be talking about her latest book, but I want to jump into that first book because I'm very fascinated about your exploration of folklore and the importance of us exploring folklore. You know, oftentimes when we think about the history of our culture, we oftentimes forget about that connect with those African tradition, and you have mm-hmm. taken upon yourself to do two publications that kind of looks at that cultural history, that history oftentimes that we don't want to talk about. That's the history of Buddha and Voodoo, and how that really connects to the power and the beauty of Black women and what they provide. So tell us about your first book, Conjuring Mamas in African American Literature, Women's Spirit Work and Other Such Hoodoo.
Yes. So that work, as I kind of climbed the graduate ladder in my graduate studies, I was, again, reading any and everything by Black authors. And what I started to notice was that there was this kind of recurring theme around spirituality, but not necessarily the spirituality that we think of first in terms of like the Black church, but there was all sorts of other stuff happening, you know, people having visions, particularly Black women having visions, being able to communicate with spirits, preparing root potions and doing all of this stuff. And I was like, you know, I've read about 6 or 7 books where this is a commonality. And so I started to try to explore why that is. Was it something that was simply part of our imagination? And if so, I wanted to know why. And so once I started to kind of dig into that, I realized that there was a whole tradition leading back to the west coast of Africa that really was underappreciated, you know, kind of hidden in the literature and in the culture, but I wanted to understand it. I had heard of voodoo and hoodoo and root work, but I didn't really know what it was. And once I discovered that voodoo or vodun was connected to Africa, I wanted to explore and understand what it was for myself. I knew what Hollywood said it was, and I knew that it was supposed to be something very evil, but I was like, well, if it's connected to Africa, then can it really be that bad? And I decided that I needed to find out for myself what it was. And so that's really what pushed me in that direction. And then once I gained an understanding of the spiritual systems and the importance of those traditions to, you know, people of the African diaspora's survival, I just had to run with it. And then again, returning to the literature, how often the literature, contemporary literature in particular, really relied on that particular theme and those tropes of spirituality. I was really moved by it, and I wanted to argue that it was actually more important than we care to admit. And so that's really what led me down that particular avenue.
You know, it's interesting because you know, because we grew up in a country that that advocates what is, you know, predominantly Christian. We grew up in a Christian environment. Oftentimes, we do not want to talk about those ancient African traditions of spirituality and our culture. But it's so much tied into some of our Black Christian practices. Am I correct in saying that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. I often have to, as I'm teaching some of this material, and I get these students who have been reared in the Black church, and first, you know, when I mention, you know, ancestor worship or the Orisha or those sorts of things, you know, they get a little frightened and hesitant about what we're actually talking about. And then, you know, I tell them, I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about ancestor worship. I thought, how many of you have a picture of your deceased grandmother or some other ancestor in your house or on your mantle or hanging on the wall? And then they were like, okay, yeah, let's think about what we do at our funerals, when we bury people, when we do these certain rituals, let's think about some of those things. Let's walk through them and try to connect them back to the things that we're studying that came with us from Africa. And once I'm able to make those connections and make the traditions more human and more more common, put them in a more common context, then they recognize that, oh, well, I didn't know that's why we did that, or I didn't know that was an African tradition, but my family does this all the time, right? And so I try to humanize it because I think, you know, there is a deep-seated fear of some of these traditions because we don't know, we have lost the memory of where they come from and sometimes why we do them, right? But just because we've lost that memory doesn't mean that the connection is necessarily broken. We still do them, and we understand them, you know, in a more Christian or more Western or in sometimes an even Southern context. But they're all kind of stemming from, you know, our African past. And you know, once students realize that, then they get really excited and you know, they go home and have conversations, you know, with their parents or their grandparents. And then they begin to make these connections that move outside of the classroom and into their actual lives and how they practice and think about some of these things. So I think, you know, it's definitely worth having the conversation and exposing people to these traditions and not just the traditions and the folk beliefs, but why we do them, right? The purpose behind them, because once they're able to understand that, then it makes more sense. So it's an interesting topic to bring into the classroom for sure.
Yeah, because, like you said, and I love you mentioned the fact that it's something that we practice every day but don't recognize.
Absolutely. You know,
the
Absolutely.
Honoring of our ancestors and the honoring at funerals when that take place. And I think, you know, we need to start connecting to praise dancing and all the things that we do in church. That is part of our history and tradition. And if
Absolutely.
Other folks want to be silent at their weddings and at their funerals and things like that, that's very unique. To our tradition, to be quiet and not celebrate those things that you're talking about. That's why I enjoy what you're doing with your two books, is to remind us about that. But specifically, I want you to really talk about, women, you know, in terms of some of these traditions that you see that are, you know, that you talk about in your book.
Okay, sure. Well, you know, what I argue in both of the books is really how black women are kind of forced to kind of take on some of the more traditional roles of the medicine man and the spiritual advisor that traditionally men served when we were, you know, prior to our enslavement. We can, you know, kind of talk about the context in which black enslaved men were emasculated and removed from family settings and all of those things, which really left a lot of the cultural bearing for black women. Black women who were enslaved often were nurses. They had to serve as midwives. They had to serve as doctors and nurses. They often had to serve as, you know, the spiritual advisors in the plantation system. And so what you find is this shift from those traditional roles that you know, men served in to black women, right? They're the ones bringing the babies into the world, making sure that, you know, the placenta is buried in a certain place as the tradition would have been in West Africa, making sure that the mother heals correctly, making sure that certain prayers and certain rituals are prepared for the child, whether it's a naming ceremony, whether it's, you know, making sure that the child is protected spiritually. You know, we can talk about, you know, being born with a call or a veil over the child's face, and certain rituals have to be done to protect that child from the spirit world. And all of these responsibilities fell onto black women. And so what we see in the literature, we can talk about authors like Toni Morrison or Gloria Naylor, who recently passed away, Paul Marshall, and moving forward to the 21st century, we see a lot of these black women writers really kind of elevate the importance of black women in preserving and expressing these beliefs and these rituals and making sure that the community as a whole is able to move forward spiritually, whether it's, you know, healing the body or healing the spirit. It is the black woman coming out of slavery, particularly in the United States, who are really serving this purpose. And so we get stories like Charles Chestnut's collection, The Conjure Woman, which the title character is Aunt Peggy, and she is the one who's serving this community. She's serving their spiritual needs. She's also serving their physical needs, making sure that they're healed, they're whole, or as whole as they can be, you know, through her hands. And so these black women are the culture bearers. They're telling the stories. They're passing the traditions. They're passing along the rituals. And so they serve a very important purpose, and that's really what my work tries to push forward. Not necessarily at the exclusion of men, because I think that they are also serving a function in the community different than the black women. And that's not to say that black men who were enslaved did not have or didn't carry spiritual power, because they absolutely did. But they just used it in different ways. And so my focus has been on the women and how we can kind of trace a lot of these healing rituals, ceremonies, spiritual knowledge through black women, and what that means and how that shifted the way that our communities function, whether it's in the black church or whether it's in alternative forms of spirituality. The black woman certainly has an important role, and so that's what I've been trying to push forward in the literature.
Again, this is Patrick Oliver, Literary Nation Talk Radio. Dr. Camila Martin is here joining me, talking about her wonderful books. And we just talked about the very first one that she has out, Conjuring Moments in African American Literature, Women, Spirit Work, and the Other Such Voodoo. Your next book, you kind of took a different approach, and you decided to look at cinema, American cinema at that, and wanted to look at how the title of the book is Envisioning Black Feminist Voodoo Aesthetics, African Spirituality in American Cinema. You know, and it made me just really start thinking about, you know, all the various movies that have been out, that how, I think it's back to what you were saying earlier, how oftentimes Hollywood gives a perception of this black woman aesthetic as we talk about voodoo. We don't see it correctly. And are you trying to kind of, not necessarily by yourself, but right or wrong to some degree? Are you talking about that in your book?
I am. You know, I am particularly invested in how black women are portrayed in film, and I know that there's a very long, troubled history of that. And so my intervention with this book is really to kind of talk about one particular archetype of black female performance, and that's these black priestesses, or these women who are engaged in the spiritual work that I described earlier, and how they're portrayed, how they perform that spirituality on film. You know, unfortunately, when we kind of look at the history, kind of going back to the 1930s, when we first see a black female conjuring woman take a lead or supporting role in a film, these portrayals are, you know, quite stereotypical and problematic. And so I kind of move from that time period and move forward. The most recent film that I look at is Disney's The Princess and the Frog, and kind of look at, you know, how these black women have performed their spirituality, how certain films got it wrong, but also how certain films got it right in terms of the portrayal of black women, their sexuality, their spirituality, and just an overall healthy and respectable image of black women. So I am in some ways trying to correct the wrong and pointing out why films got it wrong, whether it's because they're misinformed, or they aren't, the spirituality that we see on film doesn't necessarily correspond to what an actual ceremony or ritual would look like. So yeah, I'm quite invested in that, and I hope that I have, you know, opened people's eyes to kind of look at how black women are portrayed in terms of their spiritual performance on film.
So give us some examples so, you know, our listeners, you know, they can kind of go out and research or take a look at those movies. Now they have an idea of some of those attributes you identified in terms of black women, the black woman aesthetic.
Absolutely. So I try to stick to more contemporary films. I start with Angel Heart, which was released in 1987. Most listeners will probably be familiar with that because of the controversy surrounding actress Lisa Bonet's character in that film. There was a lot of controversy surrounding Denise Huxtable portraying this voodoo priestess and also the nudity in that film. I also look at Julie Dash's Daughters of the Dust, Casey Lemon's
yes.
Eve's Bayou, The Skeleton Key, which was released in 2005, is a film that people may be familiar with. And interestingly, it doesn't actually have, on screen, it doesn't have a lead black woman in terms of the performances. But what we find out later is that the black conjuring woman has kind of gone incognito in the skin, in the literal body of a white woman. So she's doing this very unconventional passing by kind of stealing the soul of a white person, of a white woman, and hiding inside of that body. Pirates of the Caribbean with Tia Dalma, played by actress Naomi Harris.
Yes.
And I think lastly, I mentioned Princess and the Frog. So those are some of the films, those are the films that I explore in that particular book and look at the way that black female spirituality is performed.
Wow. That's fun. I wish I had more time.
I wish we did too.
I mean, I wish I had more time. In closing, we got maybe a minute or two left. If individuals want to find out more about the book, how do they get both of your books? Their website, your website, I posted on my Facebook page just now. Any more information you want to give them about how to reach you? Because I would love to see you in college, in high school venues around the country.
Sure, I will direct them to my personal website, which is www.camilamartin.org. Additionally, I'm accessible by email via my Savannah State University email address. That would be martink@savannahstate.edu. I'm certainly open to any communication, any questions that your audience may have, so I urge them to get in touch with me. And all of the information about my books and my scholarship can be found on my website.
So in closing, Dr. Martin, you know, we, and I believe it because I grew up around some powerful black women, like Kanye West, the auntie team and my mothers and my sisters. You know, it's in my blood to say that when black women hold up the sky. I truly believe that. Any closing comments, you know, for my listeners out there about this whole study of black women, the black female aesthetic, Buddha, the power of black women? Just give a closing comment on that, please.
Well, I will quote one of my favorite artists who is actually a male writer, author Flowers, in his book Another Good Loving Blues. He says,
yes.
You know, hoodoo and literature are tools for shaping the soul. And I think that speaks very well to the work that I do, the work that black women do, black women writers do, as well as some notable black men as well. So I will just leave your audience with that. Literature and hoodoo. Tools for shaping the soul.
Tools for shaping the soul. Man, I have really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I've enjoyed it as well.
Right. Take care for my listeners out there. Repeat that website again.
That is www.camilamartin.org.
All right, we out of here. Next up on my list is Brother Christian Love. He's going to be talking about his two books and the importance of giving back in power. Again, thank you, Dr. Martin, for tuning into Literary Nation Talk Radio.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye. Hey, I'm going to take a short break. When I come back, Quentin Love is going to be talking about, again, his two books and his restaurant adventure called Turkey Chow.
We don't have so bad long before that judgment day. So won't you make them happy?
Hey, business owners and entrepreneurs, our illustrious leader, J.C. Love, is so excited. He's put together a 5th anniversary advertising package just for your business. Me, personally, I think he's lost his ever-loving mind. Here's what you get.
JC
3 months of advertising. 3 times per day, Monday through Friday, and we throw in weekends just for kicks. We blast your business on the Joinet Radio social media network. Live mentions on the air. You get not one, not two, but 3 live interviews throughout the duration of the ad cycle. That's a $1,200 value. This total package is only $375. That's right, $375. Business owners, get to the phones right now. Call 855-525-5683 for the next 3 months. JoinEdRadio.com is celebrating its 5th year anniversary, and the savings are being passed on to you.
Slow credit, bad credit, no credit, no problem. Butler Furniture Depot has a no credit check purchase plan with 90 days same as cash to qualify. 1 month on the job with a $1,200 a month income and have an active checking account. Congratulations, you're approved. Go by one of our 3 locations in Little Rock, North Little Rock, or Conway and take advantage of some of our super saving outstanding deals.
Who done it? The Butler done it. Butler Furniture Depot.
Attention business community. Get involved with the Father's Family Affair as a corporate sponsor. Go to afathersfamilyaffair.com to review the various levels of corporate sponsorship. A Father's Family Affair takes place June 8th through the 10th, 2017 on Philander Smith College campus. On that day, we'll accentuate, celebrate, and motivate positive fathers in the community. We can't do it without your corporate gifts. Your sponsorship can be a tax-deductible contribution supporting the nonprofit organization Part of the Solution. We've set it up so every business owner, regardless of size and scope, can get involved. From vendors to food trucks and beyond. Your sponsorship will help provide a $1,000 scholarship for a single father. Don't miss this great opportunity. Go to afathersfamilyaffair.com for details or call 615-554-0568.
Hey, this is Patrick Oliver, and again, I am back. I'm back to share with you very exciting guest that I have on, that's going to be on with me, a good friend. I consider him someone I've had the pleasure of working with, someone I've had the pleasure of seeing him doing just incredible work. So again, thank you so much for the Quentin Love. Thank you for being on Literary Nation Talk Radio.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, so thank you for taking the time. You're so busy just on the lunch hour. So I know I appreciate you taking the time during the lunch hour to talk to my listeners on Literary Nation Radio.
Oh yeah, I was in the middle of eating me a Texas turkey burger with cheese, man. Texas turkey burger with cheese.
One of your signature sandwiches. So I'm gonna tell the producer in the studio, Brother David. I think you've dropped some of the good barbecue sauce of yours on there. I think he'll have it'll be a great sandwich. So keep that in mind. Yep. So listeners out there, Quentin Love, he's on the phone with me. I'm on the phone with me right now. Gonna be talking about his 2 books. But before I get started with Quentin on his 2 books, Quentin, for my listeners out there, you know they're nosy, man. They won't know all about you. They won't know where you grew up, that sort of thing. So are you a Chicago originally?
Hello?
Yeah, man.
I grew up on the south side and on the west side of Chicago, actually. I went to Chicago Vocational High School. Actually, I just got inducted into the Hall of Fame today for my class. So, man, today has been one of those days, and yesterday was my birthday. So, man, this is going to be an amazing week.
So, Quentin, since I've known you, you've been an entrepreneur, been entrepreneurial. I mean, that's how I met you. You were grinding, making things happen. tell me that entrepreneurial spirit, did that get started growing up, you know, the neighborhood you lived in, your parents? How did that happen?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I watched how hard my grandmother worked, and my grandmother worked this labor job every day. She'd come home, cook dinner for us, and go straight to bed. You know, she instilled that work ethic in me. And my life has never been the same ever since that. And going to the Marine Corps, you know, that instilled a certain level of discipline. And I knew when I came back home from the war, I wanted to make a difference. So I just started opening up different businesses throughout the whole city so that I can just play my part as a man, you know. You got me?
Yeah. Somehow you fade.
Can you hear me, listeners?
Okay, you got me? You hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, gotcha. I'm sorry. So the other part, too, is you start opening those businesses, you know, and for my listeners out there who are aspiring entrepreneurs, tell them, you know, it wasn't easy, I'm quite sure, in the beginning. I'm quite sure you had your trials or tribulations. I mean, I'm quite sure it was very, very tough.
Yeah.
Just to say, hey, I want to open a business, and you get it started.
Oh, yeah. Very difficult to open up. And it was easy to open up a business, but the hardest part is to be able to maintain it, right? And
right.
It takes discipline. It takes dedication. You're going to have some bumps in the road. You know, I've had some businesses that shut down. I was able to open some other businesses right away and just continue. It's all about perseverance and learning from your mistakes, you know, and not looking at it as a complete failure, but looking at it as, okay, you know, I learned from that. Now, how else can I tweak it? You know, what else can I do? You know, and that's what creates, you know, that determination, you know, that spirit of you can do anything you put your mind to stuff. And that's how I follow my life is not really being concerned about the mistakes that I've made, but it's also about, okay, look, let's just keep moving forward, you know, no matter what. You know, I've had some breakdowns in my personal life and in my family structure and in business, and I just want to let everybody know, all the listeners know, that you can do anything in the world that you want, as long as you really, truly, truly believe in that, right? You know, don't let nothing get in your way, none of your circumstances, none of your financial woes, or how you was raised. Don't just let that be the issue, you know, of the reason why you can't make it, because you actually can make it out of that too, you know. You really can.
Yeah, and that's a good, you know, a lesson in words that you just shared, because oftentimes, you know, we, like I said, the odds seems insurmountable. Like, why am I doing this? You know, it ain't popping off like it should be. I don't have these material things. But, you know, being an entrepreneur, Quinn, I've heard you say it before, it ain't all about that, right?
Right. Right. And you got to do it for the love, too. You got to do the stuff you'd like to do for free. And if you can do it for free, I guarantee you, you'll get paid for it in the long haul. You know, but you got to want to do it for free. If you want to write a book, and you're writing a book just to make money, then you're probably doing it for the wrong reasons, right? You know, you got to write that book and share your story because you just want to share your story and give it to someone that can really truly make a difference in somebody's life. And in the interim, someone is going to bless you for the fee for the book and say, you know what, you deserve to get paid for that book, but not right away. You know, not right away, and you shouldn't think of it like that. I mean, that's everything. If I open up a restaurant, okay, well, the burger costs $5. Well, first of all, let me taste it. You know, it's like I had to give away a lot of free food to get people to buy food, right? You know, and that's just how life is. I will always render a service for free for a person can really see the level of service that I offer. And if you like my service, you like my quality, then, you know, you'll pay for it. And if you don't, that's okay, too. Because service and everything about it is really art. You know, it's up to the art. It's up to the artist to render payment or to decide how much it should cost you. So, and also as an artist, we can determine that we should give that value for free. So it's totally up to us, Patrick.
It's interesting you say it's about art, it's about doing something different, unique, tasting. I mean, brother, you opened up, you were a black man, you know, 6'3", 6'4". You opened up a couple of restaurants, maybe three, I think, it was called the Black Rock. All of a sudden, you went from not necessarily selling soul food, but doing these delicious stir-fry dishes in various communities in Chicago. That was kind of unique. I mean,
to be an African American man with an Asian restaurant, you know, that was pretty interesting, you know, and I eventually hired, you know, Asians to actually work for the company, and I learned a lot, you know, from their culture. They taught me a lot about business, actually. Then I was able to open up a Mexican restaurant, you know, with having you know, Mexicans working there, and they're hard workers. They're, you know, great work ethic, and their determination taught me how to be even a better entrepreneur, you know. And I opened up an Italian restaurant. Then when I finally got to my, you know, finally got to soul food and did soul food, but I've done it all. And then to merge it all together and just do one restaurant with Turkey Chop is really the greatest lesson, is to take all of the things you learn and put it under one roof, right? You don't have to be all over the place. You can merge it all together.
Right, right. Wow, that's a hell of a lesson, because oftentimes we look at particular ventures we've been involved in, and we see, and we don't involve anymore, but we don't see the value of being engaged in it. And I hear you saying otherwise, that there was something in each one of those ventures that helped me go where I'm at today.
Yes, every little step. I mean, from, you know, if the business closed, but I learned something there. If there was an ingredient that I learned to use, now I can use it somewhere else. I mean, past every little thing, there's a learning experience. I learned something brand new, fresh today, you know, that I didn't learn yesterday. I mean, it could be the smallest thing, you know, and you just continue to learn, and you got to remember those lessons and actually apply them, right? You know, we can learn, but you got to apply. And that's the hardest thing in life, is actually applying. You know, and that's tied into goals too. You know, we all have goals, but do we take action in those goals? You know, do we even know what our goals are? But you got to start with writing them down and looking at a timeline, and it's taking action. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you know, follow those steps. Goals, create your timeline, and it takes some action. And I guarantee you, Patrick, it'll manifest itself.
Again, this is Patrick Arbor, Literary Nation Talk Radio on Joy Net Radio. Joy Net Radio is located in Little Rock, Arkansas. Love that station. On the phone with me right now, sharing about his goals, his visions, his life, his challenges, his failures. Brother opened up and said, hey, I didn't do it, you know, but I took something from it and moved on, didn't sit down and cry about it. And that's what we like to hear people talk about. And I love the fact that you decided, I'm going to share some of this with others. And that's where your two books come from. Your first one being the 66-day objective. 66 days. Yeah. You're saying, hey, you'll see a different, something happen in your life, something manifest special if you go through your 66-day plan. That's what you're telling my listeners.
Right. Oh, yeah. So what I discovered is it's a 21 days to break a habit. But if you go for 66 days, that can actually lock it in. It locks it in and makes it permanent. But you got to stay consistent. Got to stay consistent in that. So at the beginning of the book, you know, you write down some goals you want to create and some things you want to get rid of, right? And you focus for 66 days, and I ask you a different question every single day. And you write it down in that journal, and you got to stay consistent. You got to stay consistent. And it's paired up, because those two books are paired up together, because the motivational cookbook is tied into that. So if you do them things together, I guarantee you, Patrick, and anybody that's listening, it will work. But it's all about you. If you believe it, you can actually achieve it. I mean, I can write anything. Anybody can write anything. You got a book on vision boards, and they can put the vision board together, but they got to look at that vision board, Patrick, and really, really believe that the things on that board can really come off the page. Because for me, I really believe that the things that I put on my vision board can really come off of the page, and that's one of my chapters, is vision board. So, and you know, me and you supposed to do something together with those books too, and really help to educate more people across the nation. But you know, we got the steps of goal setting, vision boards, mastermind groups, affirmations, the law of attraction, how to get rid of blocks. You know, oh man, this is, you know, this is phenomenal work, bro. But and all of this is tied into the woes and foes of my life, and how I was able to get myself out of a real dark place and get myself to the point where I realized that it was not about taking, Patrick, but it's all about giving and really resonating love to people, even those that we thought at one point didn't deserve it, because I know that was me. And when I realized that someone loved me despite of myself, then I can definitely love others in spite of theirs. And that's where the true healing is. That's where the true healing begins.
Yeah, you kind of hit me with that one, because oftentimes, you know, as entrepreneurs, we're the business of business, and oftentimes we're concerned with the bottom line. We're concerned with the end of the day, how much money did I make? How did I come up? What's my receipt? Receipts look like? But I hear you say differently, that part of your concern should be with giving back, sharing what you have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the secret to success. I mean, I just made 44, and if I would have learned that 30 years ago, man, you know, it's give some away. Don't be so motivated, you know, by money and power and prestige, you know, but actually be motivated by your impact in your community first. That's when it all comes to pass. But I had to learn the hard way. I had to learn the hard way, that's what it was. And that's why I wrote the book, because I didn't want people to go through the same things that I went through over and over and over again, bumping my head. You know, so now, you know, we're putting the tools out there for people to really discover, you know, to take the fast-paced road, you know, take the road to success the fast way by actually taking the lessons of the elders and people that have came before them, you know, that gave them the blueprint. I wish someone had given me the blueprint, Patrick. You know, it would have saved me a lot of time. So, but now I'm not going to be hard-headed. You know, now I'm like, I'm taking my wisdom from the elders and acquiring some mentors, reading as many books, and continuing to step out on faith as much as I can.
Which is awfully important. So, Quint, your second book, The Motivational Cookbook, so you've taken this whole practice of cooking and made it also a motivational kind of process or project.
Right. I wanted to kind of share a little bit about my life, you know, from what happened to me between 2012 up until now, and how, you know, my life is like it was a roller coaster ride, and how I got out of it, it was through cooking. Use cooking as a therapeutic tool, and applying those 10 principles in the book, you know, having an accountability partner to hold. If I got a goal and I want a goal to be taken care of and be done, who's going to make sure I get it done, right? If I want to really take it to a next level,
going in and out.
Hello?
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. We got you.
Yeah. So, you know, when I realized that the mastermind group was also the key, not just goal setting, but getting people to help you get there and watching how they get there through their motivation, you know, was key. But I also realized I had some blocks, and I had to, you know, put some stuff in the book to show how you can remove those blocks so that you can really walk through this world really truly being fearless and learn that, you know, your mind is what controls it, right? I mean, I took a lesson from one of my good friends. You know, he spent 10 years in prison. And when I would call him up and I would ask him how he was doing, he would always say, "I'm doing great. I'm absolutely fantastic. I'm happy." And I'm like, "Well, how can you be so happy in prison?" And he said, "Quentin, it's all in the mind. It's all in the mind. You got to choose, you know, how you look at things." So if I'm out of prison, if I'm not in prison, if I got the free room to roam, then what am I sad about? If a man that's in prison is happy, why can't I be happy out here in the world achieving my goals, right? I mean, I take lessons from everybody and learn that I need to be very, very appreciative. So one of the chapters is called gratitude. because one of the reasons why I didn't achieve greatness was based off of my appreciation was low. Patrick, you know what it's like sometimes we can get caught up in our work, right? And right. Not really just taking a moment and having gratitude, right?
Right. Yep.
I mean, just like just really, you know, really realizing like, man, thank you. I mean, I really, really appreciate that. You know, and even if you're not saying it to yourself, you're saying it to someone, because someone had to help us. We didn't get this far by ourselves, Patrick. I know I didn't. You know, somebody prayed for me. You know, someone loaned me money. Someone gave me money. Someone gave me something to eat. You know, someone gave me a couch to sleep on. You know, at my lowest point, let me borrow their car or what have you. You know, it's like we constantly get help from others every day. And it's really just stopping to say, you know what, really sincerely, thank you for that. And when you're sincere about that thank you, you continue to open up yourself to more and more and more blessings. Wow. It just opens up.
And speaking of that, you just finished, Thanksgiving, you gave away how many turkeys to families?
Man, Pastor, we were blessed to give away 1,000 turkeys on the day before Thanksgiving, and we fed 2,000 more people on Thanksgiving Day. I mean, that day was one of the best days of my life, Pastor. You know, because I wanted to really, really show the city of Chicago what it means to sacrifice. And I didn't do it by myself. I put together a GoFundMe page. And the people in Chicago, I mean, they rallied with me, and they donated $12,000 on the GoFundMe. I got another $5,000 from one person, and because it took us, we spent like $16,000 just on turkeys, and then we had to buy other food. And my people took care of it, man. I mean, they came together with me to help make this possible. I couldn't have did it without them. And now I said, okay, you know what? Since we're doing 1,000 turkeys, let's do 10,000 assorted hats, socks, and scarves for Christmas Eve. So Christmas Eve, we're doing it big again. 10,000 hats, scarves, and socks. And we started another GoFundMe, and right now we got $6,000 already in the GoFundMe page.
Wow.
Four more thousand to go, and we'll reach that goal too. And at first, I didn't realize that GoFundMe, you know, that's not going to work for me. You know, I had that doubt. And again, it's all in your belief system. It's all in your belief system. And when I turn my thought process around and begin to really truly believe that I can really achieve that, you know, they funded that page. It's all in your thought process, Patrick. Everything is all about what you think. And we all have moments of doubt, all of us. But it's how long you stay in that doubt. Just don't stay in the doubt too long. You allow to have that moment, but come on out of that, you know, and keep moving.
Come on out of it, keep moving, because like you said, the self-doubt, and even the, you know, your network sometimes can sometimes be concerned, and they may have doubt, you know, and sometimes you have to go ahead and push that aside and keep going, right?
Man, you know, it's going to be things that are going to happen. And it's all in how you react to it. It's all in how you react to it. All about how you react to it and how you persevere out of it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm a living witness. I mean, we talking testimony out of testimony from every human being on the planet, that it's all in how they react to a situation is what makes it. You know, and I'm going to continue to do my best to not let nothing, you know, keep me down, you know, because I'm too blessed. I'm too blessed, and I'm going to continue to stay in gratitude. And but those books and the soup kitchen, you know, because you know we do the soup kitchen every week, Patrick. You know, we have a soup kitchen on the west side of Chicago, Chicago Avenue in St. Louis, at Turkey Chop Gourmet Grill. We turn the restaurant into a soup kitchen once a week. We've been doing it for 2 years. And as of Christmas, we will have reached over 100,000 people we've impacted with free food. I mean,
100,000.
100,000 people, man. You know, and it's not like, you know, the number is a great number, but it's an unfortunate number, because we shouldn't have 100,000 people that need to be that need to get free food. You know, that need to, and it's like, but there's enough food all around. You know, none of us should be hungry. None of us should be starving or going through anything that deals with any level of poverty. Because there's enough food, clothing, shelter, and money for all of us. But I decided with my team to take this on as a mission. And we just want to show, you know, want to show some love. I mean, and it's like, it's just one less day, one less hour, second, a person is not doing anything mean to each other. No violence, no killing. You know, no hatred, it's just love. Here's a good meal for you. Here's a hot meal. You know, sit down or take it with you. And guess what? We love you. I don't care where you're coming from. I don't care if you just got out of prison. I don't care if you just committed a crime last night or that day. I don't care if you're getting high. I don't care if you're a gangbanger, drug dealer, whoever. We love you. And when people know that they love Patrick, they don't be so apt to hurt people. They don't be so apt to hate people because they know that somebody loves them. Somebody loves them outside of their own family. That's what they need to see, so they don't see us as prey, you know, or predators or their enemy. That's my loved one. Yes, even the stranger is your loved one. And that's what we teach and that's what we practice every Monday. From 12 to 3 is just that constant reminder of, hey, man, we love you. Hey, sister, we love you. Let's pause and recognize that. That's what it's all about.
Wow. Quentin, if people want to, again, find out more, how to reach you, how to get the book, how do they get them?
MotivationalCookbook.com, QuentinLove.net, TurkeyChop.com. Please go to Facebook, you know, Quentin Love, you know, like the page, follow me. I got 5,000 friends, so you may just have to follow, you know, but please go to the GoFundMe page and give. Let's help make a difference for this holiday season like we always do. Someone really, really needs it. I know I lose my scarf every year, man. I can't never find my mace to my socks. You have all the mace in your socks, Patrick. I know you can't find some socks. So, you know, we all need to stand in line to get us a free pair of socks. You know, and it's just a blessing, man. So, please, 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 everyone, love someone, man. Thank you, Patrick, for having me come out today. It's been truly a blessing.
Yeah, man, we really appreciate you. Keep up the great work. In closing, I will let my guests have a closing comment.
Just, you know, please believe in yourself and don't let no one steal your joy. And happiness is you. And I love you, Patrick. And I really do. I love you for, you know, for the bottom of my heart, for reaching out for me and
appreciate you.
Taking me under your wing and just being a blessing to others in the literary world. It's been a true pleasure watching you. And just thank you for just always blessing others. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much, brother, for the work you do. That's why I had you on Literary Nation, because what you're doing has got to be supported by, you know, all of us. You know, like you said, you're doing it from the heart, and that's obvious. So that's, you know, why I support you. And again, thank you so much for joining us, brother. Take care.
My brother, take care. Thank you.
All right. Hey, until next week, we appreciate you. And thank you for listening, to tuning into Literary Nation Talk Radio and joining the radio. Hey, I want y'all to start putting your dollars together, because I'm going to be having a fundraiser for my show, Join the Radio. You know, this we have to make sure our shows are supported. So my folks in Little Rock and Chicago, I'm going to be having a fundraiser in the Little Rock area with live music and hors d'oeuvres and things like that. And we're going to raise some money for our part of this year and definitely try to take us into the first quarter of next year. So again, save a few dollars, save those coins. I may just do a coin fundraiser for my show, Literary Nation. But we're out of here until next week. Be careful. I heard the snowstorm and sleet and rain schedule in several areas of the country, the South and Midwest. So be careful. Bundle up. Take your vitamin C. Like Quentin, Brother Quentin said, do something nice. Like Dr. Martin said, hey, study that history, study that culture, celebrate the role of women in society. Out of here until next week. Peace. Come on.
nobody, no more sleeping in bed. Oh.